And, of course, when it's Thursday, hour number three, that means it's time for Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com. Brent's appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. Brent, how are you?
I'm doing great. Hope you guys are doing well.
Yes, sir.
Got me in the shade today. I brought my Transformer sunglasses from the kids' collection, but I don't need those today, so that's good.
Y'all that's got right.
Nice shady spot here. Good fall night. Should be a really good high school football game. We got a chance to be a good high school football game. A heck of a challenge for West at home tonight against a really good Alcoa team. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and West, I think, has put itself in that really good category. But we'll see whether or not they do have enough to take on such a program in Alcoa. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion since the new ticket plan for Tennessee was revealed. What has been the reaction on VolQuest?
Well, obviously, anybody who's got a grandfathered ticket is not happy with this. Some are a little more understanding than others. But if you've had a grandfathered seat for a long period of time, or any period of time, of course, grandfather tickets are a long period of time, it's going to be costly for, it's going to cost you a lot more to go to football games. If you're a donor and have been a donor and you want to stay in the area you're in now, it's going to be cheaper for you to go to football games next year. That's in a nutshell is kind of what it is. Now, with the exception of that being the club on the west side, okay, you can't, if you're not going to buy that club seat, you're not going to sit in that section. Okay, if you want to stay in that section, it's going to cost you more money. But if you're in the north end zone, the south end zone, lower bowl, you're on the east side, it's going to be cheaper for you to go to be a season ticket holder next year if you've been given a donation to the University of Tennessee. But I get it. I mean, you got a pretty good number of grandfathered, season ticket holders that are getting ready to be asked for money that nobody's asked them for money for a long time.
Brent, does it make it tougher that you're coming off a 3-7 season that you haven't been really good in football for a long time? Does that create some angst among fans who are saying, the product's not that good, I'm going to have to donate this much money to continue to go?
Well, I mean, again, it's actually the reverse of that. I don't have to give as much if I'm sitting in most of the places I'm at, okay? But here's the bottom line. Season ticket sales are 52,000 this year?
Well, that's what he said, but I was given 55,000 okay. by Tom Zatkoviak.
All right, so let's say 55. 50, okay. 50 to 55.
Yeah.
Okay? They're obviously going down. They're going down because your product's not good enough. You're not winning enough games. So if you have a bad season this year, are you going to hit 55 next year? Probably not. I mean, it's going to be harder to do that. So the bottom line is whatever ticket plan you have in place, if you want to increase season ticket sales, because you're not giving out any more grandfathered tickets. So if anybody who's a new season ticket holder is going to have to give a donation, you got to win. And that's the ultimate deal. A lot of people say, why are you doing this now? And it's a good question. My belief on this, Jimmy, is if you're displacing 5,000 fans, some point you got to rip the Band-Aid off. Do you rip it off while you're moving 5,000 fans because you're doing some renovations? That probably makes the most sense. Is the timing good from a record standpoint and where your program's been the last few years? No, it's not. But I don't think you move people and then 2 years later go back to those people you move and say, oh, by the way, we're really doing all this for you. We've moved you, and now we're going to ask for this, or now you're going to have to do this differently. So I think that's part of the decision to go ahead and do it now.
But to what I was saying, I know a guy that's got six tickets on the west side. He pays $1,000 a year for six. Now he's got to pay $27,600 for those six. And he's like, I can't afford that. So is somebody going to jump in and pick up the slack for that? I don't know. It's a lot of money right now.
Yeah, I don't know where he's at. In
West side.
I know, but what part of the west side? What section of the west side?
ST and U.
Okay, so that's down in the clubs, in the new club section. So that's they're taking his seat and turning it into a premium seat.
Yes,
whether they were going to modernize and change the ticket plan or not, he was going to have to pay more money with the renovations. His money increase is going up because of the renovations that are being done, not because of the modernizing of the ticket plan. If he's in that club section,
well, but here's my concern. To my point is, if you're not very good, who's going to jump in and pay $27,600?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how many people are going to buy the club seat. You know, I don't know how many people are going to buy the party seat. My point is, whether they changed how that was done this year or not, he wasn't going to sit there for $1,000 a year plus six tickets in that section if that's the new club seat. He wasn't going to be there.
I don't know where this one is, but his donations are going up 400%. This other person I'm talking to.
Yeah.
So it varies, and I don't know exactly where they're moving this and that and so forth. I'm just saying that I think if you ask for that significant of a donation at a time when your team's not very good, I think you're going to have trouble getting it.
Well, I agree. I think if somebody's donate, and I don't know their seats, I don't know where they're at, but if somebody's, based on everything I've read and everybody I've talked to, if somebody's donation is going up that much, one, they were not making a donation, or two, their seats are in a new premium seating section, which is the West Club, and that cost was going to go up regardless of whether the ticket policy was changed or not, is my point.
Yeah, and all of these are making donations. It's just that the donations are not at the premium level that Tennessee is
because that seat that they're sitting in right now doesn't have an amenity. There's not a club for them to go to and get a meal or drinks or whatever that's going to be there. That's not what that seat is about right now. That's what that seat is becoming, regardless of what the change of the ticket policy is going to be. That's my point.
Yeah.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900. Let's check in with Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey. Brent, do you think there's anywhere on the field in Florida, Tennessee, that Tennessee might have some kind of thing that might work out for them pretty good as far as what they're capable of doing? Certain aspects of the game. If you think you're anywhere like that, or you think there's not,
I think Tennessee's special teams are better than Florida's.
Okay.
I think Tennessee's got the edge in special teams play.
Right.
Would you stop there?
It'd be hard to give them an edge anywhere else at this point. I think. Wouldn't you think that, Jimmy? I mean, I think Florida's, but now, how do you do it? Are you comparing running backs to running backs? Are you going to compare their run game to Tennessee's front seven, which is how I think you should make that comparison? I think Tennessee's better in the front seven than I thought they would be, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. I think Florida is significantly better in the run game than I thought they would be. Tennessee's not been tested, so we'll find out a lot about Tennessee this week. But just on paper, seeing what Florida's run game did against Alabama, I would have to give Florida's run game an advantage over Tennessee's front seven heading into this game. So Tennessee's secondary versus Florida's receivers and passing game, that may be closer to equal because I don't think Florida throws it particularly well. I think there's more of a push there in that matchup. I don't know if you agree with that, but I think there's a little bit more push. You know, in terms of who's got the edge there. I like Florida's front seven against Tennessee's ground game based on what Tennessee's done on the ground the last 2 weeks.
I do too. I kind of look at it as whose running backs would I rather have, whose quarterback would I rather have, whose offensive line would I rather have. And when I look at that, I don't give Tennessee many advantages.
Yeah, I would agree. I think either way, Florida's got the advantage, which is why Florida's a nearly three-touchdown favorite.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the special teams. That's where I would give Tennessee the edge.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I predict that we won't get absolutely, totally slaughtered. I think I will say that.
All right. Well, Steve, we sure do appreciate it. Have a great night. Let's go to John. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, John.
Hey, guys. I had a quick question and one comment. For the comment, I'll start with the comment. Not real crazy about Danny White's comments about free lunch with, you know, my dad's been a season ticket holder since the mid-1960s and been an usher for about 20 years. And no, he hadn't had to donate. We will now, and we're going to do it. You know, we're not going to lose our tickets. We're in the north end zone on the third row. You know, we're not going to lose our tickets. But my question is, does the university release, or do you guys know how many season ticket holders do not donate? I mean, is it a big number that have had season ticket holders since before 1986?
It's to my understanding, it's a big number based on what they've released. I've not seen the actual documents.
I will tell you this. Okay. Uh, not this is a couple of years ago, so I don't know if it's still true. 45% of the season ticket holders didn't donate. Yeah.
I think that's a huge number. I think that number's very similar. I don't think it's 50, but I think it's somewhere between 45% and 50%.
Well, that makes it more understandable to our family, and you know, Dad's gonna cuss and go on, but we're gonna pay it. He's gonna pay it. So, thank you, guys.
Sure do appreciate it, John. If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900, *990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. We're here at West High School. Brent's appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. Let's check in with Wendell. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Wendell.
Hello, guys. How we doing?
Fine. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question for Brent.
Okay.
Brent, this kid from South Pittsburgh, Giovanni Davis,
uh-huh.
What's the status on him, and why is he committed?
Why hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that he's got some academic things to do in the classroom. I think that's why everybody, not just Tennessee, I think that's why a lot of schools in the Southeastern Conference are holding pat to see where that's at, because he's got to get some work done in the classroom.
Okay. Do we have any good prospects for a commit from any more defensive linemen right now?
I don't know about for a commitment. They're certainly recruiting some guys out there. I think they're going to be back in the portal for defensive linemen. Is where I think they're going to end up going when it's all said and done. They're losing some seniors, losing some guys there. I think you'll see them back active in the portal to try to finish some things up with some defensive linemen. Obviously, Walter Nolan would be the top priority defensive lineman out there for Tennessee. I think they're kicking the tires on some junior college kids as well. See what the portal looks like. Maybe there's a high school kid that pops up that you didn't know about. Remember, tape watching right now is really interesting, because you didn't get a chance to see those guys, a lot of those guys, a year ago because of the COVID year. Some places they didn't even play football. And so what does the kid look like? I think that there's a lot of movement in evaluations based on how kids look through the first three games, good and bad, because the evaluation is different this year than it was a year ago.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Brent.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Wendell. Let's go next to Doug. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Doug.
Hey, John, Jimmy, and Brett. I really, really enjoy your show. I listen to it on the app as much as I can.
Thank you.
I have a comment on the ticket policy. Here's my concern. I inherited some tickets from my dad under the upper deck on the 45-yard line. Great tickets, had them since the 60s. When I inherited them, I had to reset my payment, so he was paying zero as a faculty member, but I'm not. I'm paying what was the full price. But the point being, there were a lot of people that when they bought their tickets, they grandfathered in at that rate. So there was a reason to keep your tickets, because if you bought them in and say the buy-in was $500 a season per seat or $1,000, well, now mine was $2,500. It's going to go down. But those people, they're actually going to go up. And then the other problem that you have is, what's the incentive for me to keep my seats? See, before, if I had a lower price, I wanted to keep them because I didn't want to buy them back 3 years later and have the higher contribution. Now there's no reason for somebody to keep their seats, because you can say that they won't get their seat back, but let's face it, there are a lot of seats available in Neyland right now. So to me, I worry about the loyalty that they may get a lot of people dropping their seats.
Well, they may. I mean, they had a lot of people drop their seats coming out of the COVID year, coming through the COVID year.
Yep.
I mean, that's why they're down 7,000-8,000, right, Jimmy? 10,000 from a couple of years ago?
From season ticket sales?
Yes.
Yeah, well, see, the last year, Butch Jones, because a lot of people thought they'd be pretty good, they sold right at 70,000 season tickets. This year they're at 55. They're down 15,000
right.
in the last 5 years or
right.
so.
Right, but I think they're down $4,000 or $5,000 from 2 years ago,
yeah,
or 3 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah.
So I'll go back to the point, John, I said, I think, off the top. Whether you modernize it and make it cheaper for somebody or whatever you're doing, okay, some people, as he is, it's not going to be an out-of-pocket expense to him. To others, it will be. You got to win.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You got to win. I mean, that's the bottom line, is that you have to win. Here's the other problem that you have too. Okay, financially you got to be more sound, because it's not getting any cheaper to do business in the SEC.
Right.
And it's not going to get any cheaper anytime soon. And it's not just building facilities. It's everything else that's out there available. And so you're in a catch 22. I mean, would you like to just roll on along and, hey, we can do it off of $25, $26 million in donations and we're good? Well, that's not even covering your coaching staff in some cases. You know? I mean, so you're going to have to raise more money. How do you do that? You need to win so you can increase your donor base.
Right.
And you try to make it cheaper for people to get in as a new donor. Because this program needs more volume of donors. They don't need the same 50 people or the same 2,000 people giving all the money. Okay? They need more volume, heavier volume of people giving money. I mean, this was out today. I don't know if you've seen this. But the SEC is going to implement these all-star benefits.
Yes.
That was a part of that suit.
Correct.
Okay. First conference to formally do that. There's not a cap on it. There's not a cap on how much academic benefit you can give a student athlete. Okay. So the schools that have more money can now legally give their student athletes more money. It's about cash. Sadly, it's big business is what it is, and it's unfortunate, but that's the world we're living in college athletics, and that train is not stopping anytime soon.
Yeah, go ahead, Doug.
I had a couple comments there. The first or comment question first is, I think it's kind of sad that they dumped on the faculty members. I mean, I can understand, not zero, but something a little better than what they're giving them, as the son of a former professor or a passed on professor. The second thing I had, I know they make a huge amount of money from the TV contracts. How much of the gate receipts and I count the donations for that, how much of the gate receipts are, what percentage of the income the athletic department does the stadium receipts compared to all the money they get on the TV contracts for all the sports? Does anybody know?
I do not.
I don't know. I don't know a concrete answer enough to give you anything worthy of that. I mean, I think from a donation standpoint, I think you're less than $30 million in donations, and your TV contracts. What was it, Jimmy? In the last SEC meetings, what were they at? I know it's going to go up, but it's more than $25, $28 million, right?
Well, I hate to guess because I can't remember that distinguished based on bowl revenues and all the other revenues that they got. So I don't know that number.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that the ticket revenues, the gate receipts, are actually a significant portion of. If you said, you know, is it $30 million for the TV contract and $30 million for gate receipts? That's 50%. That's a huge amount. That was kind of the question I was wondering.
I don't know that. I don't know what the TV stuff is, and I'm guessing on the donation, and expenses for, you got to take an expense. You don't have expenses for TV that you have the expenses that you have for facility use. You got to pay parking garages because for the university and the city on those things and all the deals that are done there. So you're probably not clearing that amount of dollars on your donations because you've got expenses for those home games. But I don't know the answer to that. I probably shouldn't even speculate where I've speculated, but those are some numbers that have thrown to me, but I don't know a final answer to that. John, what were you saying?
I was just going to say about, and Doug, we sure do appreciate the call, that it's interesting in terms of the academic awards for student athletes that they did cap the academic achievement awards in terms of direct financial support just under $6,000, but there's also the additional benefits that could be computers, science equipment, musical instruments, different things like that. And so I think that what they did is they opted not to put any further constraints on that maximum number, and it doesn't look like there's a restraint on how many could qualify, or they get to set what makes somebody qualify for either the direct financial aid or the, I guess, support aid, whether it be the computer, whatever they need to go to school. So it's really it's a very interesting ruling, and you're right. The SEC is out in front of this in terms of saying we're not going to do anything that further restrains what has been set in place. But that's going to be something to watch because that is, Jimmy, what could be a great amount of support depending on what the individual athlete's pursuit or study field of study is.
It's too complicated for me. I don't know where that limit's going to go.
But here's the thing on that. I'm all for this. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Correct.
Okay. In the spirit of how it's done. But how is it going to be done?
Right.
It's just like name, image.
Because each school gets to determine that.
Right. It's just like name, image, likeness. Okay. All right. Well, that's great. How's that going to trickle down to affect you in recruiting? Listen, everybody's pitching a kid a name, image, likeness plan. So it is a recruiting element to landing a student athlete. Okay? So those who do that best are going to have a better chance of landing the student athlete.
Very true.
Okay? Now, you can't broker a deal with a business, so what kind of plan are you pitching them? Right?
Right.
Everybody's doing something.
But Brigham Young did broker a deal with the business.
Right. Brigham Young did for their walk-ons, which some people say.
But they also gave it to scholarship players.
Right. Gave it to everybody. Which in the initial spirit release was not supposed to be the case, right?
Right. Correct.
But it is.
Right.
Nobody stopped it. So it's a slippery slope, and that's my point. The intent of this rule is very good, but how far are you going to take that slope and how slippery does it get to try to compete with everybody else?
Great point. With Jimmy Himes, I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Let's go to Edie, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello.
Hello. I've got a couple of comments on the season ticket changes. First of all, we are season ticket holders. We've had the same four seats that's been in my husband's family since the early 1950s. We're in Section V, not affected by the new premium seats. We are contributors because we were not grandfathered in. We pay $750 a seat, okay? So we're going to $1,200 a seat. So everybody is not going cheaper with this new plan, okay? But the big thing I'm very confused about is when I go and I look at Alabama in their stadium, a comparable seat is a $480 contribution per seat. At Georgia, a comparable seat is $475 per seat. At Florida, it's $750. So I'm real confused on how we are getting equal to our peers when we're paying more and we won three games last year.
All right, you're in section where?
V.
B.
Section B. Okay.
B.
So
and we're up on row 51 under,
right.
You know, we're undercover. We are not affected by the new
season. Sure. Sure.
And we are contributors.
Right.
So
but
I going up.
Okay. The according to Tennessee, the people sitting in those sections, those tickets currently, not moving forward, currently are supposed to be $1,700. It's a $1,250 donation and a $450 season ticket. Obviously, and I think this goes back to what Tennessee was trying to say, is that it's not uniform in sections. So somebody sitting to your left or your right, depending on where you are on the row, may be paying less than you're paying for that seat. They may be paying more than you're paying for that seat. I think that's the point that Tennessee was trying to get across. Again, I understand your point, but if you called in this past offseason and said, I want to sit in Section B, on the same row you're sitting on, and you wanted to buy season tickets, those tickets were going to cost you $1,700 a piece. If you call in next year to do that, that ticket price is going to be lower. That's why Tennessee says it's that ticket price is going down, is what Tennessee. Now, you can say that's semantics and argue all that, and I totally understand that. I'm just telling you what pricing would be for a new ticket holder in that Section this past season compared to next year.
Yeah, and I believe the 1,200 number includes the season ticket. I believe that's the donation and the ticket together per seat.
I don't think so.
Yes, it is. It is.
No, I believe
it's
it is.
It's 1,200 next year for the ticket and the donation.
1,200 for ticket and donation?
Yes, that's total. It's $1,200 for the ticket.
Which means that you're paying the same thing.
You then said I'm 750. Paying the same thing, correct.
$750 a seat, that's then $450, so that puts you at $1,200.
Okay, the way I understood it, our donation would be $1,200 per seat.
That includes the ticket. That donation includes the ticket cost. I know, they're changing that. That's the modernization.
So you're in good shape, Edie.
I sure hope so. True, you all have made me happy.
Good. Celebrate.
I have been mad for 24 hours over this.
Now you're happy.
You can always call. Edie, I would call or email the Tennessee Fund and get clarification. I bet they give you a pretty quick answer.
Actually, my husband did talk to them yesterday, and that's not the way he understood it either.
Okay. Well, that's the way it was explained to me, so good luck.
Good luck, and thank you, and I really hope you're right.
Yep.
And don't look into it tonight because you want to be happy.
Yeah.
So look into it tomorrow.
I'll stay happy tonight, and I'll deal with it tomorrow then.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
Edie. We sure do appreciate it. Final segment for us with Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com. And, Brent, we actually have an opportunity to talk a little bit about football.
Hey, what we've been talking about is important for football.
Right.
There's no question
about
that.
Absolutely. I don't discount that.
But there is a game this week.
There is a game this week, and I'm curious. If you always do the stock report. Whose stock is up going into this game, and what do you think that Tennessee has to do to hang in there in Gainesville?
Well, I think to hang in there, you got to win the turnover battle. And I think you probably need to win it somewhat decisively. I don't think it's a push. I don't think you can win it by one. You know what I mean? I think you've got to win the turnover battle, for one. Defensively, you got to limit their explosives in the ground game. Get off the field on third and long, which Alabama could not do a couple of times in that game. And then offensively, you got to make first downs. Okay, aside from Florida's offensive line, which I didn't see them coming and rushing for that against Alabama's defense, right? I don't think anybody saw that coming. Aside from that, the other significant stat or news out of that game for me is that Florida in the second quarter forced three and outs of Alabama's offense. Alabama's on the cusp of blowing that game wide open, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Now, you guys may have felt differently, but I thought one score, and that thing's a rout. And Florida's defense gets three and outs in the second quarter, which I just didn't see happening. So if you're going to play up-tempo and you're going to play fast, John, you got to make first downs. Because if you go three and out three consecutive times and take 90 seconds off the clock, might be a real tough afternoon for you. Those are a handful of the keys for me that jump out to this point, kind of where they are. Stock up for me. Jacob Warren, I think Jacob's had a really nice start. Mm-hmm. This offense has been really good for him. I knew he was a good player in high school, but I wasn't sure if it would ever translate into college. It has in this system. Really like the way that he's played.
He's worked really hard, too.
Yeah, he's added a lot of weight, and he's gotten more physical. But they're using him in a way to let his athletic ability show. I like the way Alex Golish and Josh Heupel are using Jacob Warren in their passing attack right now.
Does Hendon Hooker start a quarterback?
Jimmy, it feels like it. I mean, I don't know, but I think he's taken more first-team reps all week long. Josh Heupel was pretty non-committal today about whether Joe Milton would be available. It feels like it's Hendon Hooker, unless Josh Heupel's playing, some serious games. I don't think Florida's lost a lot of sleep either way over who's going to play quarterback for Tennessee, because I don't think they feel like the system drastically changes there. So I don't think Florida's put any extra time in, quote, preparing for two quarterbacks. Interesting, Heupel today saying he did not have a plan to play two quarterbacks, which I kind of thought if both of them were healthy, he might have a plan in third, fourth series to work in. But it sounds like he's going to roll with somebody until until he needs to make a change, if he has to make a change. That's what it felt like in his comments today. I may have misread him, though.
No, I agree. I thought Juwan Mitchell at linebacker would have a huge impact on this team. He has not. What do you think's happened?
Well, he didn't play last week, and I don't know if he'll play this week. I thought he was better in the Pitt game in terms of running to the ball. I think his adjustment into this system has been a little bit more than we all thought. I think he's been probably in Texas. He was a little more C-ball, hit-ball, kind of downhill, that type deal. Probably some adjustment to the scheme there. But, I don't know. I mean, yeah. You know, Coach Heupel said he was, on the grass, whatever on the grass working means. I guess he was getting some work in. But he was noncommittal about him playing this weekend, and nobody's ever clarified why exactly he didn't play last weekend in terms of injury or non-injury or whatever the case may be. So it sounds like he may be a no-go for Saturday. But I don't know that. He may play, but it sounds like there's a chance he may not.
I was waiting on one of your keys being Tennessee's ability to beat press coverage. Where is that one, Brent Hubbs?
Well, I've seen them beat press coverage, but when they overthrow it by 8 yards, it doesn't matter if they beat press coverage.
But they got to beat it against Florida.
They do. They have to beat it. And listen, Tennessee's not going to line up and run the football, you know, downhill on them all day long. So that's absolutely a key. They have got to make explosive plays. As much as they got to eliminate them on the other side, they have got to create explosive plays on offense. I don't see Tennessee lining up and driving it 95 yards without some chunk plays involved there, which means you got to make something happen vertically in the passing game. And, yes, to do that, you got to beat press coverage because they're going to see a lot of it.
Somebody pays a visit to BallQuest.com right now. What will they find?
We got the matchup piece up from Rob Lewis. We got everything up from Josh Heupel today, our two-minute drill. We got a couple recruiting stories up there. Of course, we have the War Room in the morning. We got our mailbag podcast up right now. War Room tomorrow, we'll do our predictions. We'll do my 10 things I think, and then we'll finish up with some preview stuff on Saturday morning. A couple more recruiting stories popping up in there as well between now and kickoff on Saturday night.
Tough Thursday for Gibbs last week. Who do they have tomorrow night?
I told you guys, tackling in space was going to be a challenge.
That's right.
We couldn't catch him. We couldn't find him.
It seemed to be optional.
Yeah, Fulton got rolling early and played really well. I mean, they were terrific. And just in terms of their speed. We are off this week, and then we go to Scott County next week. So second open date in 3 weeks. This one was planned. The first one was not.
Right.
So hopefully we'll get back to action next Friday night. And, of course, right here, going to get home and watch this one tonight to see what happens. The quarterback for West, Carson Jesse, I hope I didn't scar him too bad trying to coach him at basketball when he was 9, 10 years old. Lance Williams was hurling baseballs at my kid on the diamond when he was 9 years old. You imagine Lance at 9 years old throwing balls at kids in the box. He had kids jumping out of the batter's box before Lance ever wound up because he was a big kid then. So fun to see those guys go at it tonight. Should be good to watch.
That's awesome. Brent, good luck with everything this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That's Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com as he joins us each week.